The Ira Kaufman Podcast is on. The Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is in the house. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks Fan is here. And the man of the hour, he's getting ready to go to New Orleans. He is Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter. Mr. Ira Kaufman is in the house. Sage, how are you? Good to see you.
I'm all revved up, baby. I'm in game mode. It's T-minus five. Can you believe it? T-minus five for the season opener. It's downright chilly over here. I got to bring a shawl next time we're doing this thing. Lee, how did this happen? We went from, a heat index of 103, and now I'm a little chilly. What's going on here?
Yeah, your city of Newport Richey, which you're king of, it is almost chilly out here.
Am I going through to change of life right now at the Kemper? Is that what it's about?
No, it is.
I got you on that one.
Well, I wanted to say something else, but you'd probably punch me. So I.
So it's a Big Bucks podcast, and Ira leads with the weather and menopause.
As long as I know, as far as I know, my hormones are in good shape over there, Steven.
Ira, your podcast is presented by Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa and Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon. Now, this is a unique time, Ira, at Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa and Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon. I'll tell you why. Because it's Labor Day night as we do this podcast, but all the great Labor Day offers, by the time this podcast rolls tomorrow, they're over. So everyone's got to go to EdmoresCadillacBrandon.com, EdmoresCadillacTampa.com to see all the new deals and the new opportunities. But you know what? Every day you can go there and see the magic of certified pre-owned Cadillacs that are reconditioned, warrantied. Edmores Cadillac Tampa, our good friends over there, just west of 275 on Fletcher. Edmores Cadillac Brandon right there, Causeway Boulevard.
They're not going to fold their tent just because Labor Day has passed, Stephen. There's going to be deals going this day forward.
Oh, it never ends, and all the new offers will be on JoeBucksFan.com, some of the highlighted ones this week. And, of course, head to the websites, EdmoresCadillacTampa.com, EdmoresCadillacBrandon.com. Those are Hillsborough County's only Cadillac dealerships. Extreme level of professionalism, more than 70 years of Ed Morris. And you know what, Ira, I realized this week, we are now looking at, I believe it's 7 full years, I know this is the anniversary, or 8 full years, I don't remember which, of Ed Morse, year-round, round-the-clock, every month, supporting JoeBucksFan.com.
You know what? That doesn't happen in our business very often. That is a long, long relationship, and shows no signs of slowing down, Stephen.
Not with the Sage on board. All right, now.
Football's in the air, Steve. Let me start off right away. Football's in the air. We got competition around the corner. And the first competition I'd like to point out, who's wound tighter, Nick Saban or Dirk Cutter? I think this is a wide open exercise right here.
Lee, who's wound tighter, Nick Saban or Dirk Cutter?
Now, you think Saban's brilliant over there with his answer. And 90% of the tweets I'm reading are slamming Saban.
Who's slamming him?
Does he not care?
Who's slamming him?
The media?
There you go.
Our fellow scribe?
He doesn't care.
Of the Fourth Estate?
Of all the things he's got to worry about, the media is maybe third lowest.
Now, Lee, he apologized.
Yeah, he apologized publicly? No, he called her up.
Man, apologized.
But you know what? All of his players loved it. The fan base loved it. Like, tell those, there you go, Nick, tell those SOBs to go to hell.
When's the last time you got an apology from Dirk Cutter over there, DeCamper? I'm laying the gauntlet down to Dirk.
I don't think I've ever gave him a reason to freak out. I'm one, but he didn't. He was a gentleman. He told us, "Hey, you know, something's wrong," and that was he was cool about it.
He slapped me around for Robert Quinn in March. He slapped me around on a text.
Ouch!
And this very week, the start of the regular season, he doesn't answer Isbitt's question about who's calling the plays. Thanks him for his question and doesn't answer it.
Gamesmanship.
Gamesmanship.
Yeah, you know, there is no job industry, and industry is not the right word, job sect that is more paranoid than football coaches. None. I mean, I don't know, it's in their DNA. It's like they're carrying around the football with nuclear codes. You know, God forbid the Manhattan Project will get out.
Steve, as we speak, is there any chance that the defensive coordinator of the Saints is in a huddle right now with Sean Payton, frothing at the mouth, saying, Sean, who do you think it's going to be? Munkin or Cutter? Are the Saints worried about that right now?
Well, you know what?
Or are they worried about a tropical storm?
I got to answer it this way. Like Lee just said, there's nobody's more paranoid and freaked out than football coaches. So if the Saints are sitting around thinking, well, if Munkin calls the plays, we got to look for these trends, and this is what he likes to do, and we got to be aware. The coaches are like that. So I'm going to say yes.
I got a flash for the Saints. If Monken is the play caller, he didn't show his hand during the preseason, nor should he. So you don't have much on Monken.
When Eisenhower designed the Battle of Normandy, that's not the word, Operation Overlord. When he designed Operation Overlord, he wasn't as paranoid as football coaches are in America today.
You're comparing Dirk Cutter and Dwight D. Eisenhower?
No, I didn't.
Our president?
Nope. Okay. I'm just saying football coaches in America in the 21st century are more paranoid. Actually, I won't say that. 20, 30 years ago, they were more paranoid than Eisenhower was about Operation Overlord.
If Cutter was storming the beaches of Normandy, Steve, he wouldn't even tell you what if the sky is blue or not. He wouldn't give you anything.
Well, he's just how he's playing it, and there's a lot of tension and tightness. And Cutter, I think it's funny because he goes out of his way to sort of let the media know that he doesn't like them too much. Like, even after the preseason game on the finale on Thursday, Cutter's at his news conference, and he sits there and he says, well, you know, preseason, yeah, I love preseason. I can be like a media guy. I can just do whatever I want and sleep easy at night. Who cares? You know, he's not a big fan of the media. He consumes it. We know that.
I personally like Dirk, and he's always been good to me. We strive to be accurate. I mean, that's just journalism code. I learned that in journalism school. But we're human. We'll make a mistake once in a while. And I appreciate that Dirk, this summer, pulled Steve aside, actually. I was out interviewing a player and tipped us off about something. I greatly appreciate it. He could have blasted us, but he didn't. And I thought that was very cool.
Let's not get carried away, DeKemper. You're not playing golf with the guy next Tuesday. Just remember that. Let's talk about this play calling thing a little bit, Steve.
All right, it's in your craw, Ira. Let it rip.
Lee, I'm going to make my points. You can write down things because you know Izbitz is going to write down things. You might as well join him.
Nah.
Let me say it again. If I'm Dirk Cutter, I'm not giving up the play calling. If it's my decision, I'm not giving it up. Now, Fred Goodall, the esteemed and venerable sports writer from Associated Press, whose time with the Bucks goes back further than the Sages. He goes back to the late 70s.
Oh, does he?
Yeah,
70s,
early
okay.
80s. We were talking about this, and Goodall pointed out something that escaped the three of us when we were talking about this subject before, which is Cutter's farewell address last season, the day after the 5-11 campaign, if you want to call it that, ended. He was asked a question about who's calling the plays and would you consider giving it up. And the final sentence in a long answer, I'm the play caller.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the play caller. So what's changed other than Todd Monken's put some points on the board in four meaningless games?
Well, this is all I got to say. A lot of fans go nuts about this, and it's sort of a video game mentality. Outside of a play here or there, I'm not on the field. I'm not wired with the assistant coaches giving Cutter details. I don't see the film, so I don't know what Cutter's looking at. So it is unfair for me to go nuts on his play calling. Again, outside of a play here or there, like, what was that about? Overall, I can't do that because I don't think – and it's not just him. It could be Shiano. It could have been Lovey, whomever. I just can't go there, number one. Number two, if Cutter thinks – that Monken's doing a better job, and that he could be head coach, and I, quotation marks, head coach, where you're overall administrator, and you could do a better job as head coach by sticking your nose in other places, and Monken's taking some meat off your plate. If he thinks that, and he thinks that's better for the Bucks, I commend him for being open-minded and trying to do what's best for the team. I commend
him
for that.
That's a very nice speech, DeKemper. It was written by...
me.
It was written by Mrs. Cutter. Now, let's get to reality. Steve, if Cutter gives up the play calling, which at this point we don't know, although I assume the decision has been made, if he gives it up, I think that's a red flag. I think that something's going on. He's not doing it out of the gratitude of his heart towards Todd Monken. I mean, part of the reason, and maybe the primary reason, Mr. DeKemper, that he was promoted is because of his expertise on the offensive side of the ball.
I was thinking Jameis.
You know, and his relationship with, well, that one's still up in the air, too.
Well, I mean, you know, he didn't get hired because of his ability to work with Doug Martin.
Jameis 3-10 Winston. Let's get out there.
Well, the investment. The first overall pick.
Steve, what's your guess? Who's calling the plays Sunday? Who's calling them?
Cutter's calling the plays because he's the play caller, and anything else doesn't make sense. Now, if he's not the play caller, he'll explain on Monday why he thought this was the right thing to do.
Yeah, and that explanation will sound very much like the Kemper's soliloquy. Oh,
didn't he sort of say the same thing a couple weeks ago? That, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe, you know, it gives me a chance to, you know, check out other things.
Didn't this subject come up last summer and you know,
if I had to give three, if this is even true, well, first, if I had to bet, I'd say Cutter is just effing with the media because he's, you know, for the reasons we talked of, he likes to do that. Nah, these guys let him sweat it out. And
yeah, they'll find out Sunday.
1B, Sean Payton, the guy he doesn't necessarily have a good relationship with. Let them cry about it over there. And I don't know. I don't even know if it's that important right now. But you implied, Ira, that if he is not the play caller, that maybe somebody ordered the hit.
I didn't say ordered.
I said you implied it.
I didn't say ordered.
All right, so why would
demanded?
Suggested, urged, suggested. Powers that be.
That wouldn't be someone that cuts checks, would it?
Well, you never know. You never know. I mean, maybe there's a consensus, a little meeting, lights in the meeting, you know. Maybe you give Munkin a chance. And I'm not saying Munkin would do a bad job. I just think it would be a strange move for Cutter at this time.
Well, if you're hinting that order would come from above.
Again with the order? Will you use the proper
word? Where are you going with this? Where are you going with this?
Order's not an accurate word. It's not an accurate word.
All right. Command?
No. Urge? Suggest?
Okay, well, let's say it is a suggestion from the powers that be. The people that cut the checks.
The powers that be? You mean Jenna Lane? Well, what kind of powers that be? What are we talking about?
Well, let's quit passing gas around here. The Glazer family.
We don't know. All I know is that it would be an unusual move. It would go against everything Cutter said prior.
Well, not just that, but the Glazers have the reputation of being hands-off. Them telling the coach you can't call the plays or you shouldn't if it's in the best interest of your job, that's a heck of a lot more being hands-off. That's Al Davis, Jerry Jones infiltrating the locker room.
Never said the word ordered, DeKemper. Never said it.
All right, let's go around the room real quick here. Lee, Ira, me.
I'm sticking at 8-8.
No, stop. Is Dirk Cutter call plays on Sunday? Ira.
Dirk Cutter calls the plays on
Lee.
Sunday.
My guess is yes, but I don't care who calls the plays.
Yeah, I think so. And he better call the plays because I don't. You're throwing away a big advantage if you're going with Munkin on a whim here. And frankly, if you're going to tell me that the Saints didn't learn anything because from Munkin's play calling because it's preseason, well, then the flip is true that the Bucs didn't learn much either with him calling against vanilla defenses and not calling certain plays. So I think it's just a big bunch of nothing.
By the way, Lee, speaking of vanilla defenses, and I talked to a couple of guys in the locker room about this, the Saints have a, you know, hard-earned reputation for being an offensive juggernaut, which certainly they have been with Peyton and Breeze. It doesn't matter who the running backs are. It doesn't matter who the receivers are. Every year, they're top five.
Yeah.
Every year.
Okay, I see.
Now I'll finish my sentence.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they've been a below-average defense.
Oh, yeah.
I don't believe that's true anymore. No. I think they've made tremendous strides. The addition of Lattimore, and that's another subject I want to get into with Mr. Isbitz. Lattimore is a game changer.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
You know, and to have the offensive rookie of the year and the defensive rookie of the year, that's striking gold in the draft. That's fantastic. Yeah. That doesn't happen. And I'm looking forward to the Lattimore-Mike Evans battle. And let me say this up front, Lee. Tell me if you agree. There were several corners last year that took it upon themselves. I'm shutting down Evans. Xavier Rhodes, Patrick Peterson. These are top-shelf guys. And Lattimore probably belongs in the conversation. He doesn't have a long track record. And I'll say this. I think Evans has to step up in those situations because I don't think he answered the bell very well against those three guys. Can't do it by himself.
Nothing jumps out at me that he had poor games.
I thought Lattimore got in his head in New Orleans, Steve.
Well, he got in Jameis' head, that's for sure.
And he got in Jameis' head. So the Saints have a good defense. Jordan, who comes off the left side. I saw DeMar Dotson today. He goes, what are you smiling about, Kaufman? I go, Cameron Jordan. Cameron Jordan. He goes, get out of this locker room, yeah. Ira. So he knows he's got his hands full. They got Sheldon Rankins. And who knows what Davenport's going to do. Yeah. He's played the last two preseason games. Looked pretty good. The Saints have a decent defense. And a hell of an offense.
Yeah, I thought you were going somewhere else. I apologize for interrupting you, buddy. But I thought you were going to go that you know, with their offense, their juggernaut. And I'm like, well, you know, they did have three losing seasons in a row, even with that offense.
Even with that offense, yeah.
A little trivia question for you, gentlemen. As long as you brought up Mike Evans, quick answer, Sage. How many 100-yard games did Evans have last year?
I'm going to say one.
One. Look, the Bucs have enough weapons where let Lattimore take Evans out of the game. You should still put up a lot of points and move that football. You have the weapons to do it, and you have the flexibility to do it.
In theory, I understand, Steve, but Lee, let's all agree on one point. Evans is your lead dog. Money tells you that. Contract tells you that. He's your lead dog. He's supposed to be an elite receiver, top five, top six, seven, right in there. Right now, I don't think he's top five. He's not top five.
Right there. I don't know. You're right. He's on the cusp. I had a college coach telling me this over the summer. It was an interesting thought. I never really thought of this before. He referred to Evans as a possession receiver.
Right? You know what? It's starting to look that way.
Yeah, and he's excellent possession receiver. That's interesting. He is a first down machine, but you know what? To get to your point, like, you know, the Saints very well could shut down Evans. But as we saw last year, as Steve was suggesting, someone stepped up, and that guy's name was Chris Godwin.
No question about it.
I like Evans a lot, and I think he's an excellent football player. I think he's a little overrated. I think if you really dive into what he's produced, everybody likes to dive into Jameis and this and that.
Got the 1,000-yard season.
Got the 1,000-yard seasons, but a little bit overrated. Tailed off big time last year. I just pulled it up while we were talking. Jameis comes back. Green Bay catches 2 out of 6 targets for 33 yards. Green Bay ran out and drafted 2 cornerbacks because they got nobody to cover anybody.
Yeah.
Okay? He comes back. 2 catches against Detroit for 25 yards. 5 targets. Closes with a bad game against the Saints.
And you're talking about games that Jameis finished strong.
Yes, yes. So that's what I'm saying here is, I don't know. I need to see more from Evans, who said today, I asked him, Ira, they were asking him all about the Madden video game thing that he got involved in, the charity effort. And I said, change the subject a little. I said, Mike, this is your fifth Bucks team. What can you say about this group compared to the others? Went right to that this is the best team he's been on. So just like Cutter, just like all these other people, everybody's laying it down that this is the most talented Bucks team in a long time. You buy it?
I think I do. I mean, I still think they're thin in a couple of spots, Lee, mm-hmm. but, you know, so are the New England Patriots, if you really examine it. I think there's a big onus on the coaching staff this year, Lee.
Oh.
I think there's a big, big microscope on the coaching staff.
I think there's a bullseye on the coaching staff.
Yeah, I really do. The offensive line coach, Buckner. You got a lot to work with on paper. Buckner, what do you got? What can you do? Secondary's improved. God knows they got receivers and tight ends coming out of the wazoo. But they're thin at running back. You know, they're thin.
Yep.
They're thin on the right side of the offensive line. They are. But overall, there's a lot of talent on this team, Lee. There's talent.
Yeah, that's why I think the coaching staff has a bullseye on them. And I think they realize that. You know, we've talked about this several times over the summer that urgency, you know, they seem to know that they're, and I always use the phrase, I hate to be repetitive, but backs against the wall.
I want to see improvement from Quan Alexander. That's part of coaching.
You know what I want to see? Wins. All this, minutia, just win. Win the freaking game. Find a way to get a win.
Find a way.
Speaking of finding a way, Iris, Saturday night in New Orleans, 5 o'clock. So that means you're going to be there.
It is 5 o'clock, okay.
By 10 to 5.
Manning Sports Bar, right? Yeah.
Downtown New Orleans, Manning Sports Bar. That's sort of kicking off the festivities for the Bourbon Street Takeover. It's going to be a hangout, roughly an hour and 15 minutes or so, where stick carriers, Bucks fans from all over the place, Ira Lee.
I'll have a short little speech. I'll take some questions.
Justin Pulowski, the commish. That's the kickoff of the Bourbon Street Takeover. Be there before 5 o'clock. It's free.
Is Sean going to be there, Stephen?
FanRetreat.com is the host. Sean, of course, the boss at FanRetreat.com. And, you know, we've been pitching this Bourbon Street Takeover event. It's gone very well. FanRetreat.com really is your place to host a fan event. You know, we gather fans and connect them there to put together an event, as well as they take care of it all for you. You can buy your tickets there. You can book your room. There's still room in the hotels
flights.
And other hotels, your flights, your game tickets. But this is it. So we're excited. You know, we got rained out hurricaned out last year in Miami.
We were going to have a big turnout, Steve.
It was more than 200 confirmed. Well, this is going to be a little more fun, a little different, but you can still book everything. And if you're just going to New Orleans, you're driving up there, Manning Sports Bar, 5 o'clock, kicks it off.
You don't need a reservation. Show up.
Show up. FanRetreat.com. But log into FanRetreat.com and click on Bourbon Street Takeover at Popular Retreats, and you'll see all the details. You can shop for your tickets. Plenty of tickets available. And you know what? This tropical storm that's brewing out there, you know what? It might cause at least some people in New Orleans to say, I was on the fence today, Tuesday. I'm going to the game.
I got a tree down in my backyard.
Who knows what's going on with the storm? I'm just going to unload those tickets right now. So,
and by the way, Steve, if they have a question for Sean about future Fan Retreat events, he's going to be there. You can ask him a question right
then
and
there. You can talk about Fan Retreat all you want. FanRetreat.com. Get there. Raise tickets. Lightning tickets. You can buy them now. So pretty exciting stuff.
USF.
Bucks home opener. They're getting some good money for these Pittsburgh and these Eagles tickets. It's interesting.
Can you imagine if they win? Now, look, we've talked about this. If they win and they're going to be 9.5-point dogs, that's a big line.
Big.
For opening week. Big. If they win, Lee, could they get a little bounce at the box office for the home opener? Could they?
No.
Look at Lee shaking his head.
That interests me.
Could they sell 1,500 tickets off a win?
No. What will be sold is beer in bars in the area, because people know what happens when a team goes 0-3. They're just begging for Ryan Fitzpatrick somehow, some way, steal a win until James gets back. Steal a win. Well, if they beat New Orleans in New Orleans, I would say that's stealing a win, and this place will react as if they won a wild card game. There'll be hope will spring.
Steve, were you there when Quan was talking? Because I was right there. Were you? I think you were there a little bit. I think he referenced in terms of the first three games. I think he said something like, "We're playing for Winston and be ready for when he comes back."
Yeah, it was like we're playing for Jameis kind of thing.
Yeah, he said that.
Which I thought was
it
was kind of interesting.
Interesting mentality.
Rally the troops kind of thing?
Yeah, just some, you know, Kwan's into all that rah-rah.
Yeah, he is.
Anything he can latch onto. He's playing for Ira if you stubbed a toenail, you know? I wanted to run this by you, Ira, since you consider yourself a man of the people, a man of the fans. We did a fan poll, 24-hour poll on JoeBucksFan.com, Ira. It ran from Sunday at 2:54 p.m. for 24 hours.
You get a lot of responses, gentlemen. You do.
And 54% of the fans, it was a simple question, how many regular season wins do you predict for the Bucks this season? 54% predict a winning season.
Oh.
With the number one answer being 9 wins. But overall, 54% predict a winning season. Why do you think that is? Because that's not always the case. And, you know, we didn't predict a winning season. None of us here. I sort of gave a weird hedgy prediction. If they start fast, 2-2, they'll go 9-7. But I lean toward Lee's 7-9. Why do you think the fans are more believers than we are?
I think they believe the Bucks had a good offseason. A good offseason haul. They think Vea's going to play and contribute. You would hope he will, Lee. Who knows when?
Yeah.
But you would hope he will. Pierre Paul is a key component of this optimism, because, you know, as DeMar Dotson told us on that podcast, Lee, this summer, he didn't know what Pierre Paul the Bucks were going to get. Is he a guy that's, you know, going to coast and go through the motions? And he's been anything but. And I think the fans see that he's really taking this leadership, and he could be a difference maker up front.
He could be. I want him to be. I hope he is. But you know what? And I'm just, call me jaded. Call me jaded, but you know what?
Called worse.
I heard the same feces about Robert Ayers. Sure, I'm at to the point where
Ayers
doesn't
have
so,
JPP's pedigree. Doesn't have it.
That's true, and I've seen with my own eyes what the players think of JPP and everything. But I'm to the point I am so jaded, so talked out about
you
this
say
team.
Show me. You say
just
show me.
Show me. You know what? Oh, this guy's great. He's such a great teammate. He's making guys better. Well, let's see the damn results.
Steve, I'm happy that Buck Nation and the readers of our site and the listeners of the podcast are not beaten down by the skeptics and all the negativity. I think there's something to be said for that. Now, look, the Glazers always say, you know, in their March little discussion, we got the best fans in the NFL. Everybody says that. you know. But this is an example.
Sternberg, I guess, has.
See, this is an example of a fan base that should be beaten down. Should be beaten down. Most people should be picking 6-10, 7-9. I got them at 8-8. And instead, the majority's got them with a winning record.
Well, the fans who are still here are not beaten down. But when you go to the stadium, Mr. Attendance, and you see 10,000 unsold seats, those are the beaten down souls that were here years ago. So that's a whole.
They can come back. They can.
Come back in a heartbeat if they're believers in what they're seeing. Now, we have other directions to go on the podcast, Ira, but I wanted to mention this. We're not going to talk a ton about the bottom of the roster guys, but two guys were let go over the weekend. Last year's special teams captain, Josh Robinson, was cut, and Keith Tandy, you know, pretty much a backup safety who was more of a special teams guy in last year, but he has contributed in the past. He was let go as well in favor of a younger player. Now, my question to you is, who's going to make up those roles on special teams? And I'm a little concerned that Chris Godwin, who's an excellent special teams player, he's going to be out there on all four phases and might get hurt doing something stupid.
They do a lot of lip service. Teams do it, not just the Bucs, about special teams. It's a third of the equation. It's the third of the triad. There's your word for the day.
Not troika, but triad.
Next thing you know, Josh Robinson's out on the street. Lee? The guy was very good at what he does.
He's very good.
Very good at what he does. Yeah, you know, he's not going to be contributing much in this and that, but there's a role for Josh Robinson, and it's not an easy one to fill.
Well, I think they do have it filled. And when I say the name, I'm going to cause accidents.
You're not telling me Alex Kappa's going to run down that field.
No, but I want to preface this with an apology to local law enforcement who's going to be busy calling records for people, ambulances, you name it. This guy, what I'm about to say, I'm on top of the mountain screaming. When this guy is on the field on defense, he will get someone fired. But he's very good at special teams. His name is Ryan Smith. He's very good at special teams.
Look at you talking up Ryan Smith. That's
outstanding. On special teams. Defense, I mean, I want to slit someone's throat when I see this guy on defense. A lawn chair could cover people as well as Ryan Smith on defense.
We got him all revved up over here, Steven.
But to be fair, he's very good on special teams. All these plays that Josh Robinson made, if you notice who was right by him or involved with him making those plays, was Ryan Smith.
On the Tandy issue, Steve, I'll say this. Great guy, good locker room guy, good glue guy.
Glue guy.
But when you really look at it, his whole Buck career boils down to 5 games in 2016. That's it.
Yes, yes.
And I'll throw this out at you, Lee. Tell me if I'm wrong. He had the job going into last year. He had the job. Reminds me of Daquan Bowers. Now, Bowers didn't show up in shape or whatever. I can't say that about Tandy. But he had the job, Lee.
Yeah.
All you got to do is fend off Chris Conte.
Show up.
Fend him up.
Well, you and I both agree that Conte is much maligned for whatever reason. But
your favorite head coach says he's, quote, much better than people give him credit.
Well, Light's basically said that, too. And a couple years ago when Light re-signed him, maybe it was last year he re-signed him, I can't recall off the top of my head, but Light said he thought it was unfair the way fans go after him. Conte was hurt, if I remember correctly, after the Kansas City game, you know, when he made that pick. Oh, by the way, two players Bucks fans scream about not never making plays. Gerald McCoy tipped a pass that Conte intercepted in the end zone, won a game. A big game, too. But Conte got hurt the next game, if I recall correctly. And Tandy started the rest of the season. And like you said, he did excellent. He did excellent. The position was his. And like Caleb Benenuk this year, could not grab that brass ring.
And not because of injury, though, Lee. I don't remember Tandy being injured.
Tandy was not injured.
He just didn't get the job done.
No, he was banged up early in the season. They said it affected him. It just didn't happen for him. But, you know, sixth-round pick of the Bucks, and his career as a sixth-round pick was pretty darn good.
Wasn't he a Shiano man?
Well, he was a Shiano man. He actually, Sage, I got to disagree with you, he had 3 picks in his second season. Rondé Barber's a big fan. He came in under Barber's wing and all that stuff in 2012. But I'm curious.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk. That was a quote-unquote surprise that he was let go. But
They went with a younger guy.
See? But it's not like they released Vernon Hargraves.
Right. You're right. Some people thought Spence was in trouble. Some people thought Spence was on the bubble.
Have we spoken about that yet?
No.
The fact that that guy was playing, he's injury-prone to begin with, and you're playing him against truck drivers in the fourth quarter, that spoke volumes to me.
Something's going on with Noah Spence, Steve. Something's going on.
He's not very good right now. That's what's going on.
I thought his off-season regimen, he's going to be a beast.
I said this to Lee, and we've talked plenty about Spence, but if you look at him physically, since he came into training camp looking like Adonis, he looks softer. And I still say eating all those calories to bulk up artificially like that, and then you get to training camp where you can't sit and eat every hour and a half in training camp. And his body didn't seem the same toward the end of training camp at all, and I don't know. But we talked about it. He's just right
Lee,
now.
Lee, I watched him quite a bit the other night, and I don't think he has enough variety of moves. I don't think he does.
But the story on Spence, I think the bigger story is right now, he deserves the bust label right now, as of we sit here right now. And we know what happened to the other second-round pick in 2016. He just got cut from the Chargers. And Vernon Hargraves, Jason likes pulling for Vernon Hargraves like no other. You know, when this whole thing gets evaluated, that's part of the deal here.
No question about it.
Well, at the end of the year, I think you might be able to toss it. I can't slap the bust word on any guy that's been hurt. I just can't do it. That's just it's not in my blood. I can't do it. Because I don't know of anybody, with the exception of Myron Lewis, that wanted to be hurt.
Well, Aguayo wasn't hurt, and he's a bust. So,
yeah, that's what I said. He wasn't hurt. Yeah. He's a bust, clearly.
Yeah.
But I can't go there with Spence yet. The thing that – I'll just say it. The thing that just drives me bananas wasn't so much that they drafted Aguayo. That's clouding it for me. I know people in the organization loved this Yannick guy from Jacksonville. Loved him. Thought he was going to be a stud. And they were right. And instead of drafting him, they drafted Aguayo.
You know what? It's funny you mentioned that.
That just drives me wild.
Prickly Pete Prisco was in town a couple of weeks ago. And, of course, the first thing he does with me is shill for Tony Boselli. And I'm not opposed to Tony Boselli as a Hall of Famer because for 4 or 5 years, he might have been the best left tackle in football.
Dominant, wasn't
he? That counts. That counts. Short career. Terrell Davis might open the door for Boselli. That's a story for another
Gale
day.
Sayers. No, Gale not Sayers. Peyton Barber. Gale Sayers.
Now, when I asked Prisco, what, you know, he's very close to the Jags. He used to cover them, and I go, what are the main story? What are the compelling stories in Jacksonville? And I mentioned Calais Campbell. I said, hey, I voted for the guy as defensive player of the year last year, which I did. And he goes, this defensive end is going to get more sacks than Campbell this year.
Wow.
The guy's unblockable.
Wow.
He couldn't pronounce his name, but
yeah,
he called
either.
Him unblockable.
Well, I call him Yannick.
Yannick Ngakoue. I talked to him at the Pro Bowl.
Prisco thinks he's going to be fabulous.
Very intense guy. I look at it differently from Lee, is that, well, they picked Spence instead of Ngakoue. That was their defensive end.
Yeah.
So they misjudged those two guys.
The fact that this guy was very much on the Bucs' radar, very much.
Third round pick he went.
Very much on the Bucs' radar, and they didn't draft him. It just makes me want to vomit, man.
Boy, the Jags have a lot of defensive playmakers. They do.
The Spence thing will be interesting. The reason I have to call him a bust now, just because, you know, we're here, is if he doesn't play, he might not be active on Sunday. That's
what do you mean? They're missing defensive linemen left and right. When's he going to play?
I don't know, Ira. I don't know. Who knows with this team? But you never know. They're obviously down on him. So we'll see. Look, they rested Will Clark in that game, I believe. He didn't play the fourth preseason game. He was smiling in the locker room today.
He's not smiling now.
Team. Now they signed Ryan Nassib.
From a winless team.
They might have to play Vinnie Curry inside as part of the rotation.
We're not shocked.
Against the Saints because they're missing two defensive tackles, if you count Unrein.
Yeah, yeah.
And doesn't that open a spot for Noah Spence?
Well, they like this Jarrell Worthy, the guy who made the team.
He's been.
So anyway. We'll see. Sage, all right, look, couple of things. Oh, another appreciation moment for Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. EdMorseCadillacTampa.com, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Morse, M-O-R-S-E. Get used to that name. Ira, before we get into your chat today, your private chat with linebackers coach Mark Duffner, I wanted to bring up a sore subject.
Sore for who?
Well, a sore for you and Lee, because I really enjoyed myself at One Buck today hearing you guys sort of do your own 5-minute podcast.
And, oh, I know where you're going.
And
he's trying to egg us on here, Albert.
It's a fascinating little debate because it's at the core, it will be anyway, come October, November, of many people in Bucks fandom. Now, you...
I have no idea where you're going.
I know exactly where he's going.
You already said it in this podcast. I wasn't even going to bring it up, but you brought it up early. See, that's why I write things down, Ira. You said Jameis, 3-10. 3-10. That was his record last year.
Am I wrong?
You are in the camp that says Jameis is not a winner, and if the guy can't be a winner this year, I'm not paying him. They can find another guy to not win. Using the John Gruden logic of we didn't win with Khalil Mack, and so we traded him. Now, Lee is in the other camp thinking, come on, this guy's a good quarterback. You don't get rid of good quarterbacks. I'm not going to referee, but I'd
love
to.
Because we know where you stand.
Well, I stand in both camps.
I said if he goes 5-8, I'm not giving him the money.
So,
and if
I'd like to hear you guys discuss this out.
Lee, if he goes 8-5, that'll change my mind about this kid. But he's got to do it. He's got to do it. For you, he's already done it.
Yes.
18-27, good enough for Lee DeKemper. Good enough.
So you're a Sean King kind of guy.
Not a Sean King, but if the guy goes 4 years and has this brutal record, don't you have to move on? Don't you?
Let me know how you're supposed to keep a lead when your gutless defense lets tripe like Tyrod Taylor score in 3 plays, go 75 yards on you. Jameis gave the Bucks
very well that day.
Jameis gave the Bucks a lead 4 times in the fourth quarter this year that the defense blew. Bill Polian himself, one of the best GMs in the NFL history, in the Hall of Fame, speaking specifically about Jameis, said you can't hang that record on him because the defense is so bad.
Yeah, who's Polian? Now listen, he also has a reputation for very sluggish starts, Lee. Very
now that is
sluggish.
Fair. That's more than fair. That's more than fair. But you know what? It seems like people like 2016 didn't happen. Everybody says, "Well, he can't win games." Well, wait a minute. They lost a tiebreaker for a wild card.
I understand. But as Steve likes to point out,
throwing to Dante Dye.
And Steve's very dangerous with that laptop. Steve, correct me if I'm wrong. But they average like 20 points a game every year. That's not enough.
Very
it's
low on the point total, yeah. They're a bottom third scoring
and
team.
And last year, there were a lot of weapons to be used. Same weapons they got this year, except for that running back who's struggling. I know Dirk.
Yeah.
I know Dirk. He knows the playbook. I know Dirk. He's not struggling with the playbook. He's
undercurrent.
Putting his work in. I understand.
You think he called up Prisco?
He's also averaging less than a yard a carry. But be that as it may, I'm not closing the book on Ronald Jones. I'm not going to.
Or
that.
As you usually say, never mind that.
Never mind that. did the Bucs have weapons last year? And did they have a mediocre offense? When you look at the most important thing is scoring points.
Plenty of weapons, terrible in the red zone. Sure. Everybody knows that, Ira.
And Winston takes no responsibility for that, Lee?
I didn't say that, but this guy's gifted, man. How long has this franchise begged, the Glazers begged for a quarter? You got one now, and you're going to toss him for who? Next Sean King?
I said I'm keeping my mind open, but he's got to produce. He's got to produce.
Yeah, he's got to produce. I agree with that. I mean, unless he goes all Josh McCown, I think you bring him back.
Sage, he goes 5-8. You're done with him, right?
I think I'm done with him. I think I'm done with him. Let him hit the market. See who's going to scoop him up.
Well, what do you tell at that point? What do you tell the fans like Lee and others who are like, "What are you doing? This guy's 25. He's got a lot of talent. What are you doing?"
Hell, there's a section of town right now that didn't want him back. Right now,
well, that's
they
not
didn't even want to wait.
That wasn't because of the play on the field. That's because nonsense off the field. That I get that.
His play on the field doesn't warrant giving him the benefit of the doubt for things off the field. So, look, I'll be the first to celebrate number 3. Go win some football games. Very simple, Steve.
There was another quarterback game. The Bucs had. He couldn't win football games.
Who, Steve DeBerg?
No. This guy only won 3 games in his career with the Bucs. They traded him for a second-round pick. You voted for him in the Hall of Fame.
This guy's got 45 starts, Mr. DeKemper. 45.
Steve Young.
45 starts. 45.
3 wins.
Not getting his face pushed into the snow in Green Bay.
3 wins.
No, that was Steve a famous Young. Picture. Young getting his
face.
Oh,
I think you're about Jameis.
No, I'm talking about Young getting his face. That
3 wins.
That was the highlight of Young's career in Tampa.
All right, before we get back to this week, one more hypothetical just for kicks. Just to try to revive the intensity of this afternoon, which we're not doing. If Jameis wins some games, let's say he goes 7-6 when he comes back, but he does not fix the turnover issue. Now, I believe he's got number 1 in picks since he entered the league since that year, and he's the leader in fumbles. If he doesn't fix the turnovers, Then what? Does it change anything, even if he's winning? How do you feel?
Well, 7-6, I'm not jumping through hula hoops either. This team has talent. He's got a lot of weapons around him. Dare say DeKemper can complete 55% of his passes with this group of targets. Who says turnovers are the key to football? His coach.
Oh, every coach. Just about.
His coach. Cutter says it more than most.
Well, so, Lovey.
Explosive play. Now, Munkin said it the other day. If we have explosive plays and we don't turn the ball over, we'll score points.
Anything.
They go together.
Yeah.
They go together. So to take your hypothetical, if Winston doesn't fix his turnover issues, that's a problem, Lee, in year four. Even you would admit that.
Oh, yeah. And I'm to the point with Jameson and turnovers, that's his biggest fault. That's his biggest fault. I wouldn't give up on the guy. It sounds as if the Bucs have a losing season, you're talking about you bring him back regardless. I'd see what he does with a different offensive coordinator. Because he's only had one, and he's done well with Cutter.
All right.
But I've never ignored the turnovers. Turnovers are bad. He doesn't make that stupid turnover in Green Bay, they win that game.
There'll be more juice on this topic going forward.
Just throwing it out there. All right, Ira, you talked to Mark Duffner today, linebackers coach, one-on-one. Anything you want to share with the fans?
I asked Duffner specifically because I've been thinking about this. I said it on the podcast, and I wanted to get it from a coach perspective. Quan Alexander, intangibles, A. Intangible.
Like grade, you mean?
A.
Oh, yeah.
Energy. Passion. Mm-hmm. Wants to win. Stepped up against Swaggy Baker when anybody could have, but it was him.
Yeah, but way too late, but yeah.
Intangibles, A. Now, I'm going to throw this out, and don't drop your microphone. Fundamentals, C.
Well, he was a third-day draft pick for a reason.
He's got to improve about the angles he takes. He's got to wrap up better. His tackling technique's got to be better. So what Duffner said is controlled aggression, Quan. Don't go off the reservation. Don't be fooled by decoys. Stand your ground.
Is over-aggressive, in other words?
Over-aggressive.
Okay.
And it shows up.
It does. You're right.
And, Steve, again, we don't want to be too simplistic here with Winston got to win games and it's a team game. But I'll throw this out, Lee. You're the middle linebacker on the 32nd ranked defense. That's not good. That's not good.
Anybody
you're
playing
the middle
for the
linebacker.
Yeah, yeah.
You're the middle linebacker.
And that
you're ready to excuse Winston. You're ready to excuse Alexander. You got to step up, Lee. Got to step up.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on, it's not like Jameis is the 32nd quarterback. It's not like the offense is 32nd offense. The offense was top what, 5? 32nd defense is just. I mean, with that talent,
last and third down defense.
With that talent, I mean, I'm not saying that. That's Pittsburgh Steelers of the 70s kind of talent, but you got Pro Bowlers and first-round picks all on every level of that defense. And 32nd?
Quan's a raw talent. Raw. I didn't say rare. I said raw. but he's got a lot of talent.
Raw.
And he does a lot of things that you can't teach. The love of football, he has it. He has it.
I got a quick question for you.
But Duffner has some work to do with him, and Duffner knows it.
Was it Duffner saying... The C grade, is that what came out of his? That's saying it.
That's me.
All right. Okay. I just wanted to clarify.
I didn't ask him to give a grade.
I like Steve, I thought that's what Duffner was saying. Like,
No. I'm glad he clarified that. That's me. But Duffner said, he loves the passion. He loves all
How
those things
not?
About
yeah.
Quan. But, young players tend to be overly aggressive. They're out of position because they want to make a play.
Mm-hmm.
Jameis is a little bit like that.
Took the words out of my mouth.
All right, Ira, your podcast, we're going to get heavy into the ball game on Thursday.
We're going to talk about the Saints tonight. That's right.
Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, that's where you find the podcast.
Subscribe. I'm back on the charts, Isbitt.
Back on the charts, although, Sage, sorry, I looked it up as we're talking. You're off the charts. Fluid situation. You'll be back.
Fluid situation.
Look at him. Unbelievable.
You didn't ask me about Ruth Bader Ginsburg tonight.
You can tell us all about
about
the lady
Thursday.
Who saved the NFL.
There
your television habits and all that. Sage, send us
send
out
us out. Looking forward to seeing all our friends Saturday night. Lee, do me a favor. When you show up for the fan takeover, bring me a cup of gumbo to go from your gumbo shop. So I can slurp it down while I'm giving my speech.
No muffaletta from the grocery?
Well, I'm not going to argue against it. do what your heart desires, Mr. DeKemper. I'll pay you back. I'll give you a couple of bucks.